Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And I truly have a gem to present to you today, Miss Nancy Langdon Jones. Nancy, you've been a panelist for the Los Angeles Times Investment Strategies Conference, where you were named one of the most influential people in the profession by readers of Financial Planning Magazine in 2002. And our American Businesswoman's Association 2003 Top 10, and a recipient of the Albert Nelson Marquise Lifetime Achievement Award in 2001. And I want to talk about this. You published So You Want to Be a Financial Planner, Your Guide to a New Career. The ninth edition was published in 2018. And my opinion is that this is one of the must reads for every aspiring financial professional or CFP certificant. Nowadays, you're just giving back to the profession, and I really appreciate your time today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here, Dominic.
Oh, this is so fun. I am really, really appreciative of the fact that you spent this time and that we are getting to soak in some of your wisdom for all that you've done for the profession and all that you know. So I'm really happy to get into this topic of, so you want to get into financial planning, here's what you need to know. Let's kind of talk about the past of planning, of the planning profession. I think to set up, you know, where the audience or my primary audience is learning for, where they're coming in, it's helpful to get some context, right, for how this industry is formed. And I'd be curious, what do you feel that the future financial professional needs to kind of really appreciate about this, you know, 50 or 60 year industry that we have right now called financial planning?
What a great question. It has not been an easy road.
Yeah.
The profession was probably only about 10 years old when I got started, quite by accident. But at that time, well, it was born out of from the insurance industry. And they based it on that model, which was selling things, and it was a lot of competition among people starting out, and the public was not ready to pay for financial advice. I mean, why should they? They could go to a brokerage and get a free financial plan. Of course, the purpose of that was for the brokerage to find out how much money they had to invest, but it wasn't really financial planning. It was just getting to the cash value of the client. And today, I mean, I can remember when I would tell people that I was a CFP and they would say, you mean CPA? And I said, no, certified financial planner. And I mean, they corrected me all the time. Nobody had ever heard of it. The ICFP and the FPA have done a tremendous marketing job to make the public aware of the marks and what exactly financial planners do. So today, I think it's in the public domain. In the early years, the culture, the sales culture, the professional organizations made a determined effort to lose the competition part of this. And during my entire career, I could not fathom another career where there is so much cooperation among planners. And this is important because there's such a huge body of knowledge and nobody can know all that stuff. So you need to be able to go to other planners who have expertise in areas that you're falling a little short in and be sure they're not going to steal your client. And they're not. It's just, they're at least the fee-only planning. I'm not talking about the brokerages, but the financial planning organization itself. The planners are very generous with their time and help for other planners. It really works out great.
No, I think you bring up a lot of really interesting points here that I don't know that the audience is maybe aware of. For instance, how the industry was born out of the insurance industry and how, you know, back in the day, as we'll call it, in order, if you were a consumer of financial services, the only way that you can really get access to products and or a plan, unless you knew how to do this on your own, which was a very, very, very small portion of the population, you had to go through a broker. You had to go to somebody that had access to these tools. And I think, you know, now, you know, in 2021, what we're seeing or have seen for the last at least 10 years is this disintermediation, right? Decentralization. There is no need to go to a broker anymore. And I wonder how that has changed the experience in your view, right, of how people are consuming financial services. Do you have anything to say about that?
It's huge. As you say, there just wasn't, there was no career path for one thing. And it's, you're right, it's been only about 10 years that there has truly been a real career path where you can say, I want to be a financial planner. Here's the steps I need to take. You know, had you been around when I wrote my book, the book would never have been written because you have all these answers now. But there was nothing like that available. So I really credit the schools and universities for stepping up and starting financial planning as a major. And now, hundreds of colleges and universities across the country have a goal of sitting for the CFP exam when you graduate, just as part of there. And you've already put in a lot of hours, perhaps, so that you're very, very close to being able to use the marks.
No, these are all good points. These are good points. So I've asked a few people this, but I would love to get your thoughts on this. And I know the audience wants to know what you think about this. What do you feel are the top skills for, or the desired skill set, let's say, of tomorrow's financial professional?
I think probably the most important one is the ability to communicate. Mm. You can't get a client to take action if you can't clearly understand what they're telling you. So you need to develop skills of listening and then interpreting and getting back to your client on how to proceed. If you don't understand what it is your client wants or what they see as their goals, they're not gonna pay any attention to you. So knowledge is another very important skill. Of course it's a skill, but what I mean by that is you've got to know yourself and you've got to know what you don't know and how to find out or find somebody that can help you to increase your knowledge in a particular area if it's necessary. Don't bluff your client. You need to be able to let them know that you don't know and you'll find out and get back to them. And then that brings up the fact that you need a good network. And networking is a skill, a huge skill, and very important so that you have a body of people that can come to your aid and you can share things with. And if you have problems, you can talk them out with people that know how to fix them.
Man, you know, it's so interesting you gave that answer because I want to follow up with this question because a lot of people come to me and I'm pretty sure they have come to you too. And everybody is really, you know, bullish on the technical skills, like what education program should I use? What study guide should I use? What letters behind my name should I get? You know, all that kind of stuff. And not to say that's not important, but you just named three skills that I totally agree with you that probably trump, you know, any letters behind my name. And I've been notorious for saying this, you know, some of the best recommendations I feel that I've given to my clients come from the fact that I've been married 23 years and I have three adult children. So it's really the game of life.
Yes, it is.
That has helped the most. But with that being said, let's talk about designations for just a second. Let's pivot there. What do you feel obviously the CFP, and then maybe you can just kind of say, I only feel the CFP, I don't know much about anything else, and here's the reason why. What do you think are probably maybe I guess the, or maybe the best professional designation for somebody that wants to go into this as a career?
Well, I absolutely agree with you that the CFP is mandatory if you're going to call yourself a financial planner. It's the CFP board has taken great pains to instill that in the industry and the profession. So that's it. Otherwise, I don't think the clients care what you have. So, I mean, I have a master's, but nobody ever paid any attention to it. It didn't matter. They did ask me in the later years. They made sure that I had the CFP. And they are starting the, about the time I left the profession was about the time the clients were actually going online and researching people that they were looking for to be a financial planner. So that's very important. But as far as other things are concerned, I think it's a personal thing. There are a lot of planners that really thrive on the technical aspects of everything. Other planners are more generalists. And if you're going to be an expert in a particular field like taxes or estate planning, you do need, of course, additional education in that area. However, you, in order to keep the marks, you need to have your continuing education, and you can just getting the minimum continuing education that you need, you will get a lot of additional training and keep your skills up. If you want to go further, I mean, I have people in my book that, I mean, it takes them two or three lines in the index to get all their credentials in there. And they are very adamant that they're all there too. They don't like not being recognized for all of their work. But again, I don't think the clients really care. They just care that you care.
Ooh, that's a soundbite right there. We'll have to make sure we mark that. Clients care that you care. Let's go down that road just one step further. I think you make a really great point. So first of all, for context, I've been in the industry for a little over 20 years. I didn't get my CFP until year 15 in the industry. So I definitely favor getting experience first. Actually, I would say that the experience that I had by the time I sat for the CFP made that process a little bit easier. Definitely want to disclose the fact that in practice, as a CFP is different than studying for the test. So for everybody out there that's sitting there, there's a little different skill sets there with preparing for the exam. But I want to say that the design of this career is so that you're competent enough in order to help people through some of their largest problems that involve their money. And you've already highlighted, you know, communication as a top skill. What I would just want to say is that I think that what you're saying around the clients don't care is something that needs to be underscored. Of course, CFP is a marker and it is a signal that you are proficient. But at the end of the day, the clients just want to know that you care and that you're going to help them solve their problems. Would you agree with that?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm curious why you waited so long to get your CFP.
Oh, this is a good question. So, a little rabbit trail on me is I started in the hedge fund industry, and in the hedge fund industry, everything was chartered financial analyst, CFA. So that was drilled into my head for 8 years. So when I finally got back to client facing financial planning and wealth management, I naturally targeted the CFA because it was just kind of like, I didn't know what I didn't know. I failed the level one of the CFA, which caused me to, you know, kind of retool and see what I really enjoyed about this profession. And then, you know, it came down to CPWA, the Certified Private Wealth Advisor, I think offered by Investment Management Institute or something like that, the Chartered Financial Consultant by the American College, and then the CFP. And when I did all the research, I noticed all the work that the CFP board had done. And this is around 2014, 2015 that I started looking at this. And I was like, this makes the most sense for me. So that was my path.
By the way, I think there's only one more class, one more course you need to get the CHSC if you have the CFP.
This is true. I made a commitment to myself and my wife that I was done studying for a while. So at this point, you know, I have a master's in finance. I have my CFP. I'm like, And to your point, like, clients don't really care, but I get what you're saying. I could add another four letters if I wanted to really easily.
Right.
Are you ready to accelerate your progress? Are you ready to make the leap into the financial services industry? Maybe you're about 12 to 18 months away and you want a sneak peek on what it's gonna be like. I got you covered. It's called the Jumpstart Accelerator Group. These are individuals that are looking to make the leap into the financial services industry in the next 12 to 18 months. And what I'm gonna do to help accelerate your progress is I'm gonna pair you with one of my professional development program cohort graduates. These are people that are just like you, probably a few steps ahead because they've already gone through the program and they are already on their journey. They can share their wins, they can share their experience, they can share their perspective with you. And they're gonna do this inside some mini coaching sessions. As you go through that, you're going to really, really understand what it's going to take to make the leap properly. All of this, and I'm throwing in some lifetime access to some bonus trainings that I think are really going to help you get started. For more information, check the link below or send me an email to hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. And now it's time to get back to the conversation.
Let's talk about the future. And I want to weave in, so you want to be a financial planner, your guide to a new career, because you're on the 9th edition, if I'm not mistaken. I think you may do a 10th edition. Let's talk about that a little bit too. But let's talk about how this profession evolves. And I want to know your particular take. We've kind of covered this a little bit, but what is your take on behavioral finance and how that's being integrated into the, let's call it the planning experience for future professionals?
Oh, my favorite topic.
Oh, great, great.
The profession was totally based on the technical aspects of everything. All the six courses leading up to the sitting for the exam were all very, very technically oriented. And then there are two major conferences every year with the ICFP, and one of these is the general big conference. And the other one is called the retreat. The retreat's a little more flexible, a much smaller group that's getting together, and it's changed considerably in the last several years. However, back in 1994, and I have no idea how they did it, but George Kinder and Dick Wagner, two very early pioneers in financial planning, convinced the retreat folks when they were setting it up that they wanted to present something really offbeat. And you talk about behavioral finance, that was my first introduction to it. The audience was full because everybody was going to be taking it anyway. But so one third of the people were in their session. And when it was over, they didn't leave. They wanted to hear it again. Mm. So they didn't go on to the next session. Those people stayed. So then the next third came in and they're standing room only, but they heard it. And then those people stayed too. And now everybody's in there asking them questions about behavioral finance and how this would work, where you're actually getting touchy-feely things with your clients. And this, you know, is just so totally off the wall. And they realized that it was important. And that was the very first introduction of behavioral finance. And from that, I started an organization called the NASRUB. And it was born from very early financial planners who really believed in this aspect of getting to know your clients' hopes and dreams and working with those kinds of goals rather than monetary goals and insurance needs and specific things like that. This was totally new. So I credit NASRUB and that very first session at the retreat with bringing this, as you call it, behavioral finance to the profession. And I don't think it's going away anytime. It's just more and more. That's what financial planners can bring to their clients that brokerages can't.
Let's do skill set part two or part B, if you will. What do you think the planner of tomorrow needs to do? How do they prepare to help clients through that behavioral finance part of, because I agree. I think this is where the profession is going. It just some, for more context, people can, there's so much information out there. People can get access to their, you know, how their accounts have done. And I mean, you've got all these automations and technology. You know, I don't believe my clients really come to me for the fact that I'm just, you know, going to give them the best stock picks or I can place them in the cheapest insurance policies. They really want to integrate the financial advice that is pertinent to them, that is specific to them, and help them make better decisions in life. And to me, that's the essence of the behavioral finance component. How do people prepare that are coming to this industry to get there so they can deliver that?
Well, it helps to have a degree in psychology. it also helps to know people that deal in this, to have access to therapists and you know, people that are used to dealing with people and their emotions, to give you a little help along those lines. And there are more and more classes available to people that this goes to the communication being an important skill, both listening and explaining. You really need to work to develop those skills so that your clients feel at ease with you and are willing to open up and tell you what you need to know in order to get them where they want to go. And oftentimes the client has no idea. So it's your job as a financial planner to help them arrive at what their wishes are. I had somebody call and ask for a free appointment, which I offered at the time. She was there for a whole hour and then left. But my opening question used to be on this free appointment, okay, why are you here? And usually somebody had a reason. In her case, I want $1 million. So I laughed and I thought that was kind of a joke, but she stuck to that and only that the entire hour. I tried every trick in my book to get her to open up, but there was just nothing. And I finally said, you know, and she had $600,000, by the way. So she was well on her way to the $1 million. But I said, well, you know, there's nothing I can do to help you. You need to just keep doing what you're doing and you'll get there eventually. And so she turned to leave and I'm right back of her. She turns around and she's crying. And she went back and sat down and she said, I had to live in my car for 3 years. And if I had $1 million, I'd never have to do that again. So that was the only time I really felt that that was a very legitimate answer to my question of why she was there. She wanted $1 million and that was her number. So you just have to know how to, I wasn't able to, but she finally came through at the last minute. But you have to know how to get the real reasons out of your client.
No, I love that. I think it reminds me of something I read in a book by Steve Sims. It's called Blue Fishing. And I'm not going to remember all the reasons behind the whys, but he said, you basically ask why three times, right? The first why would have been like, why are you here? And then, you know, that's kind of like what she wants you to think, you know, that's what she wants you to think, you know, that she's here for the $1 million. And then you keep on probing and then eventually you find out that she doesn't ever want to be homeless again, right? That's the real reason. And that can help you as a planner put the strategies in place that will allow that never to take place again or a high probability that it won't take place again. So no, I love that story. That's great. Thanks for sharing that. As we bring this thing in for a landing, let's talk about your book. Like, why did you write it initially? And where are you on the evolution of that? Because I think there it's got so many stories and nuggets in there. We'll definitely link it down in the show notes to make sure people visit your website and purchase it. I mean, they don't need to, this right here is going to be the, if you will, the pitch for it, but they need to purchase it. It's definitely a very good read. Talk about what started that idea and where you're at with it right now.
What started it was, I was in a financial planning discussion board very early on. I mean, very early on, back in the 90s, early 90s. And people, they asked me to moderate the Getting Started part of the board. And people kept asking the same questions over and over, too lazy to scroll back and see that there were any, that had already been answered a dozen times. So I thought, well, I'll just do a fact sheet. So I spent a Sunday afternoon and realized that it probably should be a pamphlet. And then the more I got into it, I realized that it was probably going to have to be a book. So that's how it got started. Wow. But I started updating every other year, and then I kind of got lost in the pandemic. But I get stories, updated stories from a lot of people that I've interviewed for the book. And this year I'm starting to get them in, and it's fascinating what they have changed because of the pandemic. And strangely enough, most of them have been, had maybe their most successful year, even though they haven't been able to see clients directly. Mm. I did have a very sad story from someone who I think can help readers tremendously, because he had just opened his business, been in business for a few months when they had a family medical emergency, and things just fell apart. And after another 6 months or so, he finally closed his doors, his first year in business, and he closed his doors and had to quit, and he's going to start over again. But I think he came away with some insights that I think would be very, very helpful for people who are just starting out. Jumpstart's going to be a big part of it, of course, an addition. And again, you in 2018, when I last published, and I was working on it during 2017, but you weren't even in existence. I mean, Jumpstart wasn't in existence at that time, was it?
No,
so I didn't find you. Thank goodness you found me. I'm working on a chapter on diversity. Mm. I feel there's just not enough. Everybody feels there's not enough diversity in the profession. So I not only would it help to open up the planning profession, but I think there are so many people that could be helped by having more people. You know, I'm talking about gender and race and ethnic considerations. There are so many people out there that can't get financial planning because all the financial planners speak only English, and they, you know, they're white guys. So it's just like everywhere else. So that's got to change. And I know the ICFP, and I mean the Financial Planning Board and the IEFP, the Financial Planning Association, are really working to be much more inclusive. But did you know, I didn't know that Chinese is the third most spoken language in America. And how many Chinese financial planners are there? And a lot of these people that speak Chinese don't speak English. So where are they going to get the help they need? We just need to open this up to the world, really. Yeah. And have planners available that everybody can relate to. And I've had clients that have been deaf, and I've had to learn how to communicate with them. I've had clients that are blind. And I mean, this was a whole new world to me. I didn't understand. And transgender clients, which I just, until I had that client who was a referral from another client, I just had no idea what transgender people went through. I mean, so I had to get past that before I could really come up with things that would be of use to them. We just need people that belong to all of these different groups in order to serve them. And they need served. So.
No. So the first thought that comes to here, first of all, you are so on it with what you just said. I think one of the main things that I think about when I think about this profession and why it's such a great profession is when people ask me, why do I do this? I'm like, first of all, I think good financial advice has the ability to change family trees, and everybody deserves for their family tree to be changed, regardless of where they come from. Regardless of what they mean, you know, if they're black, white, purple, doesn't matter. Everybody deserves the chance for their family tree to be changed. And I totally agree with your saying that we need to have a broad spectrum of competent planners in the profession that have the best interest of the client at mind, right? So, you know, a lot of people are going to go, well, I'm a financial educator, financial advisor, whatever. I think there's a distinct difference on this financial professional that has trained to help the client from a skill set standpoint, technically, emotionally, all the things that we've talked about. I think that's a big difference, because I think the last estimate I looked with Cerulean Associates was there's like 350,000 people with the title of financial advisor, but we have just shy of 90,000 CFPs. So I think we have to find a way to grow that number of professionals, whether they're CFPs or whatnot, but definitely people that are from looking at it from the fiduciary standpoint of serving the client first.
Definitely.
So this is interesting. So when is, I don't know, can you give us any dates about, so the book, like just kind of tease us a little bit, Nancy.
I wish I could.
Okay.
I'm hoping certainly by summer.
Okay.
Like so many others, I really have trouble getting myself together. You know, I'm still not getting out much at all. So my daughter's a PA, and she really runs a tight ship. She just won't let me. I mean, she finally let me get a haircut the other day, which was a big deal. But I get up in the morning and I think, oh, well, I really don't have to do anything, so I don't.
You've earned that right.
I've got to get myself together, and that's all it's going to take, because once I just sit down and start working, I'll be fine. I probably have to learn a word all over again. But
well, we'll definitely entertain all those inquiries on the current edition, and look forward to the new edition sometime later this year. Well, as you know, this podcast is here to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at the next level. And in that context, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with the audience?
Just don't give up. Just keep having your dream and heading toward it.
Man, I think, you know, you're simply stating that, but that's a big statement, because, you know, I just got a text the other day from a guy that's 56 years old, saw one of my videos, and he was like, hey, Dom, is it too late to leave my 32 years in the, you know, I'm thinking about leaving the post office after 32 years. Is it too late to become a planner? And I was like, man, it's never too late. It's never too late.
You bring up a good point, and the number of career changers that go into financial planning is great. They have something that new graduates don't, and that's a lifetime of experience, just like you. I mean, you've lived it already, so you know the pitfalls, and that is so badly needed. Also, they have a built-in market for their services because of the contacts they've made in their previous career. So they've got a jump start, and they probably have savings and things that will help them get started by being financially independent already. And there's just so many good things about a career changer that that particularly new clients can relate to. I mean, somebody else in their 50s is going to relate to this ex-postal worker much more than he's going to relate to a 21-year-old graduate.
This is an excellent point. I think so there's a PSA for all you career changers out there that are thinking about whether or not you can do this. You definitely can. You're going to have to roll up your sleeves. It's not going to be the easiest thing, but it will likely not be the first thing in your life that wasn't easy. So
there's another thing, Dom. There's so many people now that are taking early retirement from, and that have early retirement, like firefighters and law enforcement people that have amazing pensions in their 50s. And these people are young and vibrant, and you know, they can have an entirely whole new career. Many of them do. Yeah. You know, from they're financially well off, having just come off of a successful career. And boy, there's no better career to change to.
I would agree with that. I actually have a person in the Jumpstart community that is 2 years away from retirement, I think with the New York, in New York as a police officer. And he found the community through I think a YouTube video or something. But anyways, that's where he's thinking of coming in. And he fits that demographic that what you just named perfectly. So I don't know, we can continue this forever. I think this car is so easy to talk to you, and it's such a joy, really refreshing to hear your insights and just everything that you've done. I would just want to say this on behalf of this current generation, and I would say financial professionals everywhere. Thank you for your contribution to this industry. It's very needed, and we appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, Don. It's been great.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.